This week on the Borag World Show, we look at becoming a user experience developer and the ongoing battle for an accessible web. This episode of the Borag World Show is sponsored by Aurelius, LinkedIn Jobs, and UserList. Hello and welcome to the Borag World Show, the show about all aspects of user experience design, digital strategy and working in digital. My name is Paul Borag and you're joining us for the virtual meetup season where people just kind of turn up in the chat room as they are doing right now and offering to, and some of them come on the mic and we chat and we hang out, and Marcus is here, so that makes it all right. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. Are you very chilly today, Paul?
Oh, because I'm wearing a scarf.
Yes. Yeah, indoors.
Indoors. Yeah.
Not working?
No, it's nothing like that. And it's, I've got a cold, all right? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying not to play it up because, you know, I'm a man and you know, we like to have a good moan about our colds, but I've got a sore throat. I've got a poorly throat.
Oh, poor Paul.
I suspect I've probably got the coronavirus, which is why I'm self-isolating and not doing anything and just sitting at home.
That's what you've always done, Paul.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
I've got a little bit of a cold as well, and I instantly thought, that's it.
That's it.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I have genuinely run out of toilet roll. Okay? So I thought, I've got to go and buy some.
Yes.
And I got looks of like, you're one of those people that ruin it for the rest of us, as I pick the last packet off the shelf.
Oh, really?
in the co-op over the road.
Oh, yeah. Right. Are you hoarding toilet roll in case... Well,
apparently it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing.
In case of
thing.
The apocalypse. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're all going to be, you know, dying in our beds and unable to get out and you know, quarantined, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go and buy lots of tins of beans and... loo roll for some reason.
Have you had anything cancelled from a work perspective yet?
We are thinking, not thinking, it's likely that there'll be an American project coming up in the next, well, I don't know, couple of months, and we've already thought, well, that's going to be a remote thing instead of an in-person thing.
Yeah.
So yes, I guess if that happens,
it's kind of scary, isn't it? From you know, from a business perspective, how big an impact that it has. You know, they're talking about you know, a lot more people home working, which is mm-hmm. fine for me, but it doesn't work for everyone, does it, by any means? And you know, obviously, I speak at a lot of conferences. We were due to go out to Croatia later in the year, and we just don't know whether that's going to happen now. You know, because obviously, I mean, conferences are a petri dish of disease at the best of times, as people come from all over the world and start shaking hands with one another. You know, it's
I mean, do you really want to get on a plane? I mean, that's like they're always full of disease and horrible stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the great thing is that next December I have a cruise booked.
Oh, how lovely!
I know. I guess the cruise line as well. It's Princess Cruises, the same people that had the ship in Japan. So, you know. But life goes on, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, guys at work have got Japanese holidays booked. Until the Foreign Office says don't go, you're not insured.
No.
You're thinking, well, shall I?
Yeah.
But then I'm of the feeling, I might as well just get it.
Yeah,
get it over and done with.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're relatively lucky in a sense because, you know, we're not in a vulnerable group, are we?
I'm more vulnerable than we were looking at this yesterday.
Cause that's really?
What all anybody talks about at the moment? If you're in your age group, you're I think 0.4% of people between 40 and 50 die from coronavirus, whatever it's called. In my age group, 50 to 60, it's 1.3.
Ooh.
That's quite a lot. Big jump.
Yeah, that is a big jump. Crikey. Mm. And also, you know, all those years of smoking, your lungs are knackered.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's good for you, isn't it? Smoking, that'll make me harder.
You should. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, we spent far too much time talking about the coronavirus, considering
much more
it, you can't avoid it, can you? It's just everywhere at the moment. So
I got a new notebook, Paul. You know, like when you get a new notebook, it's a nice thing. Oh, you don't? You probably
don't. I don't do paper, notebooks, paper, but paper. I'm aware that one, people do.
Look! Yeah. Can you see?
Oh, it's got squared paper.
Squared paper. I forgot how much I like squared paper. Oh, it's a thing of beauty. Little things, you know?
I'm trying to be excited for you. Actually, I kind of know. My equivalent is a new Sharpie pen. Before the nib gets kind of crushed down, and obviously it gets bigger, doesn't it? You know, as mm-hmm. a new Sharpie pen. I love a new Sharpie pen. Although I must admit,
pencil boy myself, but
I've gone off of Sharpie pens. Because, so I got, with this new book that's coming out, I'd said, didn't I, about signing postcards? Have I mentioned mm-hmm. that before on the podcast? Yeah.
So I massively one-upped you, if I remember rightly.
did you? Probably. That sounds like the kind of thing. But anyway.
Signing albums back in the day.
Yes, that was it. Yes, I remember. So I was signing these 500 postcards with a Sharpie pen, and I swear they gave me a headache in the end because they
smell. Oh, what, from the fumes? Yeah.
Anyway, what have you been up to this week, Marcus?
Well, because you always ask me this, and I like to prepare something.
I never do.
Well, just a few kind of like thoughts about sort of what, just to remind me of what I've done. And I basically thought that really all I've done is been flitting about.
Oh, okay.
I've been flitting.
Yes. As I bet people have loved you for flitting.
The thought that came out of this actually is quite relevant to people loving me.
Yes. Why?
But anyway, so it's fairly normal for me to kind of flit from one thing to the other. That's what I do. I don't mind it at all. And I've often said that I wonder what all the fuss is about with email and interruptions and things like that. And that just that they're just simply a part of work, aren't they?
Yes. He says. Uh-huh.
Anyway, and it got me
Don't
thinking.
Get me on that.
So what's the best way to interact or interrupt your co-workers when you're working with them? And things like obviously phone and email, text, black messages, that kind of thing. The person that you're connecting with, they can just ignore it if they're busy. That's fine. But what about if you're in the same room? What should you do? And I have to confess to being a little bit naughty on this, and I just say, "Hi, Dave," or "Dave," and you have to forgive me because I'm so nice in other ways. But I do just talk to people. I guess it's also partly being sort of the boss figure, I suppose. Although I still don't feel like a boss after 20 years or however long it's been. Anyway, I'm rambling. I know, because obviously I've talked to developers over the years about this, and that they're potentially kind of holding 20 things in their head. And when I turn around and go, "Hey, Dave," and it all comes crashing to the floor when I say, "Hey, Dave." But spare a thought for people like me who are spinning 20 different plates. And I can't, and I need to spin my 21st plate, and I can't get the other plate off until I've asked Dave his opinion on what the thing is I'm talking about. Anyway, I'm just trying to, from another point of view. But that was what was occurring to me this week about sort of interrupting people. And I've always said that what you should do is, if you don't want me to talk to you, is put your headphones on.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's the universal message for don't interrupt me. Mm. What I've got a problem with is spare a thought for me because I'm juggling 20 things.
Yeah,
you choose to juggle 20 things. You could be much more organized. You just basically you're saying, "Help me out because I'm unorganized," which is crap.
Oh, so, no, not Paul. I'm super organized. I'm doing so many things at the same time.
No, yeah.
What have you been doing, Paul? What have you been? I'm walking away from this quickly.
Yeah,
what have you
all
been
I've
doing?
Been see, I've been doing one thing, and I've
have
been
you?
Focused, and I got it done, and it was great. I've been wireframing, so it's been really, it's been fun.
I've done some wireframing in there as well in my 20 things.
Oh yeah. More and more, I'm doing the conversion rate optimization wireframing. So we've got this page that's performing very well on search engines, but people aren't converting. And truth be told, a lot of the time, the reason that they're doing very well on search engines is because they've been designed for search engines, not people, right?
Yeah.
And so they normally got lots and lots of text in, and they've got, you know, a bit keyword stuffy, not too bad. Normally people are not stupid anymore. Mm. And understandably, people are terrified of, well, if we change things, will it ruin it with Google?
Oh, yeah. And then it's all going to fall down.
Yeah, yeah.
And you won't be number one on Google anymore.
Yeah. And I do get that. I do understand it. But then what's the point of driving all this traffic to your site if they're going, whoa, that's really wordy and I can't cope with that and I'm leaving, you know? So yeah. So that's what I've been working on. It's that constant balance between you want to maintain SEO and you want to improve the conversion rate at the same time. And, of course, the trouble is you don't really know. Or there's – no, that's not true. There are so many rumors flying around, right, about what Google penalize or don't penalize. So one of the things that, for example, that you often do when you're faced with a page with all this content and all of this kind of stuff in is you go, well, okay, let's break it down into chunks so it's more manageable for a start. That's a good thing to do. And then you do things like, well, okay, we don't need to show all of this immediately. You know, it can be revealed in time and in different ways. But as soon as you put anything on under a tab or an accordion, oh, Google is going to think that it's evil text that's just keyword stuffing and we're going to get into trouble, you know. But actually, that's not true, you know. Google are very open and say, look, you know, yes, we do penalize white text on a white background. Yes, we do penalize text that's been shoved off the screen, but they're intelligent enough to work out, oh, actually, this looks like some kind of accordion thing where they're revealing content over time. So, but it's a really interesting area. I love that tension between the SEO and the conversion rate stuff. So that's what I've been playing with this week, and it's a fun game.
And I guess, I mean, how quickly will you know if what you've done is successful?
Well, that's one of the downsides, I think, of being a consultant, and also
you're not building it.
I'm not building it. And also people don't necessarily come back to you and say, oh, that worked really well, or no, that didn't. And you don't, there's only relatively few of my clients that I'm working with on a regular basis because, well, you know what consultants are like. They're quite expensive to keep hanging around for too long. You know, so I'd often don't see how big a difference it makes, which is a bit frustrating, really. I would, you know, I'd like to know more than I do, but, you know, it is what it is. And also, a lot of times, you know, with some of the bigger clients I do, but this particular one, you know, I'm quite a big investment for them. And so, yeah, they're not going to be coming back to me every week asking me to do this again, you know? So
hopefully, well, fingers crossed, it'll do well.
Yeah.
And you can just ask them.
Yes.
And if they don't, I will shout at you, Paul, it's good news.
Yeah. There is that feeling of, do I want to ask them? Is it worth the risk? Or should I just creep off into the dark and never be seen from again, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and I said this to them, you know, it's kind of weird, isn't it, that people come to you, I think I was saying this on Twitter recently, they come to you and say, fix this, right? Make this better. And you start going, well, the way to do that is we run some testing and we form a hypothesis. And no, I just want you to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. But the way you fix it is by doing user research and testing. No, just look at it and tell us what to do, right? So that's what you often end up doing. And it's like, I don't know. I'm drawing
Paul
admittedly.
Boeing just said he didn't
I
know.
I don't know. Well, it's true. You have there are so many variables, especially with something like encouraging people to take action. There are so many influencing factors that you're taking at best an educated guess, unless you test.
You test it. Yeah, cool. So, and even then, I mean, testing is like, well, yeah, I mean, you're testing 1,000 people?
Yeah.
You know.
And are you testing by getting people, paying people money, which means that they concentrate on it more? Or are you testing them in a fancy usability lab where there's no distractions? Or, you know, even that, it's trial and error. You know, that's the only way. Which is where things like A-B testing are very good, because that's real people in a real environment. So there you go.
Okay.
Should we? Well, actually, before we get our first person on, which is Donald. Are you back yet?
He says he is.
Donald, he is.
Livingston,
oh yes, he just
I'm
said
back.
All right. Well, we'll get him on in just a second. But first of all, we'll do our first sponsor. Our first sponsor of the day is LinkedIn Jobs. Thank you very much to them for supporting the show. And it's a good one to have on, if I'm honest, because I think a vast majority of us, a lot of people that listen to this show, are either trying to find a job or they're desperately trying to find people. And matching those two could be very difficult and very time consuming. And worse still, you know, I work obviously with a lot of people that run teams and that kind of stuff. And the worst thing is hiring the wrong person. It has this enormous negative impact on your business and your own personal mental health. I mean, you know, Marcus, without naming anybody, we've had one or two occasions where our stress levels have gone up and our team has become uncomfortable over the years, haven't we?
I can think of four.
Wow.
Well, and five, actually. Yeah.
And am I one of them, Marcus? That's the question.
That was the fifth one.
But you didn't hire me, so you just kind of, I just came packaged, didn't I, really?
No, you weren't one of them, Paul.
So that's why something like LinkedIn Jobs is so good, because you can screen not just for those kind of hard skills, but also soft skills as well. Things like being a good team player, all that kind of malarkey. And also it's really good as well, because one of the other problems that we used to have is we would get a lot of people that would apply for jobs with us. And then you'd discover, well, actually, I live in Brazil and that's kind of complicated and there are visas involved. You can basically weed out all those inappropriate applicants based on criteria like, do you have a visa and that kind of stuff. And most importantly, over 675 million people have been using LinkedIn Jobs at one stage or another. So you certainly don't need to settle for the wrong person. You're going to have no shortage of applicants. So find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and you'll get the first $50 off. You just go to linkedin.com/BoagWorld. I just randomly threw jobs in there. So linkedin.com/BoagWorld to get $50 off of your first job. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. I'm going to say that one more time because I feel like I screwed up the
really
URL.
Important part.
Yeah, the most important part. So linkedinjobs.com. No, I've done it again. linkedin.com/BoagWorld. There we go.
Got it.
Flipping heck. Okay. Right. It isn't a mouthful. It's a bit of a mouthful, that URL. No, it's not. It's LinkedIn. You know, it's like we type it in
every day. Don't say it again.
Right. Let's invite Donald onto the screen, who raised his hands with trepidation and I leapt all over him. Yeah, Aslan is now having a go at me saying that he thought I was a professional speaker. I guess I'm professional because people pay me, but it doesn't mean I'm any good at it, does it? That's two very different things. Donald said that he would come on and have a little chat. I don't know Donald, not met Donald before. Donald doesn't sound like one of the regular Slack people. Hello, Donald. How are you?
Yay.
Can you hear us?
Hello, Paul. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Excellent. So, Donald, how have you been in the Slack channel, or are you just following us on Twitter? How did you come out about?
I've been a member of the Slack channel for some time. I've been listening to you and Marcus for better part of a decade, it seems.
Wow.
I'm actually rather excited to to be on the show for.
Oh, that's lovely of you. So, yeah, I mean, it's a decade. Oh, crikey, a decade.
I've put two and two together. It's just, it's the you're in as Donald, and you're on Slack, you're Don. And I know it's a simple thing.
Oh, yes. That's it. Yes.
Yeah, lots of jokes.
Thank you.
Yeah, my full name is Donald. I go by Don.
That's the problem. That's why I did. I felt like it was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it. Thank you, Marcus, for joining that dots. So, Don, what is it you do? Tell us a little bit about your job.
Well, I'm the senior UX developer at Fashionphile. Fashionphile, it's fashion with P-H-I-L-E at the end. So we specialize in buying and selling luxury handbags and accessories. So, you know, the high-end, you know, like Chanel, Louis Vuitton, those kind of, you know, high-end merchandise that you buy for thousands of dollars, we will, you know, our company purchases them, verifies their authenticity, and then, you know, sells them, you know, at discount. And, you know, so, and we, you know, have a, you know, lot of experience and professionalism around that brand. And, you know, my job is making sure the website both operates and looks good. So, like I said, I'm the senior UX developer here.
It looks very nice. It looks lovely. I'm looking at it.
Is it a nice
now.
One? Have you pulled it up?
Yeah.
What's it called? Fashion
file with a PH.
Yeah.
I mean, Fashion file.
Let's have a look at the sexy site.
Yeah, lots of.
You're a sucker for this kind of stuff, my Marcus, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you like your fancy watches and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a nice site, actually. Very clean. Like it. So, now, Donald, you said something really interesting there. You described yourself as a user experience developer, not a user experience designer, a user experience developer.
Yes.
So, I love it. I love that. And, in fact, I wrote a post a while back about, you know, we need more user experience developers. So, why do you include the user experience bit in your job title?
It's largely self-inflicted because I really enjoy making sure that the experience is optimal and you know, user-centric, and making sure that it not just works, but it works well, it works cleanly, and you know, I the way I kind of describe my position is balancing the left brain and right brain of a user experience. I work with a lot of really great designers, create some beautiful artwork and interfaces, but they don't have the knowledge of the logical underpinnings that go into creating a software or a website. Alternately, I work with a lot of really great back-end developers, really smart guys, really great coders, but they couldn't create an interface to save their lives. My niche is balancing those two disciplines.
Yeah. And I really like that. It's a very important role. And I think people constantly underestimate the influence developers have on the user experience. I mean, there's you know, a huge amount. So if you take your typical designer, and I'm the same with this wireframing that I was doing. I was doing some wireframing this week. I don't show every error message. I don't show every permutation. I show exactly what it's going to look like at every, you know, scale. Developers have to interpret all of that stuff. They have to take a static comp and turn it into a living, breathing website. And there are so many decisions that are made in that process as you do that, that are absolutely vital. And then, of course, there's things like, performance, which is probably one of the biggest influence, especially on an e-commerce site, has an enormous impact on conversion rate and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, there are so many developers that introduce things, take shortcuts. If they're not user-centric in their thinking, they take shortcuts that are great for them, like putting in a capture form, for example, but are terrible for the user. So we need these people that kind of sit across those two disciplines. So that is very, very cool. So how long have you been there?
At Fashionphile, I've been just over a year here.
Okay.
So, you know, I've been in the industry 10 years ish. So, you know, at various, different, companies and agencies. I've worked on, for companies. I've worked on projects for companies including Cisco and Verizon. I worked at another local company here in Utah called Overstock.com. You might be familiar with them. Mm. But yeah, I've had a bit of a career.
Yeah. So have you always worked in-house or have you done some agency stuff as well?
I've done some agency work. I worked at an agency for a while at MRM McCann, their advertising agency, where I worked on some various projects there. So yeah.
And I was going to ask you. Sorry, Marcus.
I have to apologise. I just keep looking at all the nice stuff on the website.
You completely zoned out, haven't you? And you're now looking at the website. Don, tell me what the why in the last year that you've been at Fashion File, what's the piece of work you've done that you're most proud of?
Well, there have been a few. The one that I'm most proud of, about midway last year, Fashion File entered a partnership with Neiman Marcus. They're a department store here in the States that they're a little bit more high class department store, and as part of that project, partnership, had to create a portal site for Neiman Marcus employees to be able to both access their inventory, and as part of that partnership, we would have people be able to pick up and drop off merchandise at Neiman Marcus department stores rather than us shipping it out to them or having them send it to us. And so, we created a portal site for the Neiman Marcus employees to both, track incoming packages that to their stores, and also how to, once customers have dropped off those packages to their stores, to send them back into the main Fashion File offices for authentication. That was a greenfield project, for me that I was able to, build, from the ground up. I built using the Vue.js framework, using a new backend API that one of our backend developers here created. So it was a really fun, like I said, a greenfield project.
Yeah.
Always nice.
Yeah. You don't get enough of those, do you?
No. There's always baggage, isn't there?
Yeah. So I'm quite interested, Lewis is asking about it as well in the chat room, about, the type of people that use this site, especially around things like the buy it back feature that you've got. I mean, who is using this site? Is it, is it people like Marcus that have got more money than sense, or is it no, I'm joking, Marcus. What kind of people are we talking about here?
That's a good question. A lot of our merchandise is fairly high end, so it's going to appeal to customers with a little bit more. As you say, more money than sense. but it also makes these higher end merchandise available to clientele that may not be able to otherwise afford it. We have a thing where after the merchandise has been on the site for a certain period of time, we start discounting, and we have kind of a last call. This has been on the site for so long, we've discounted it further. So it enables us to have make things available, really nice merchandise available to people who otherwise might not think it would be in their price range.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's really good. Is it mainly desktop users still, or are you getting a lot of mobile traffic? Because I could imagine that this is the kind of site that people pull up regularly and keep going back to. And, I imagine them looking on their mobile phone every day to see what the deal is, kind of thing.
Yeah, a lot of our traffic is mobile. And so that's one of the things, we want to make sure it looks nice on the desktop. But that's actually one of the back and forth I frequently have with our design team. Our design team frequently likes to make things really look nice, because looking nice on the desktop and making sure I have to push back and say, okay, let's make sure this is mobile first, because that's where most of our traffic is. And so,
So, I wondered whether that was going to come up. Yeah, I wondered. That's part of why I asked the question, because it sounds like you've got a team of designers that are more traditional designers than they are digital designers, and you're having to do that translation work for them, which is, you know, good luck with that one. So, Don, thank you so much for coming on. What a fascinating! I love the principle of the business. I think it's really interesting. I love that buyback feature. I think that is absolutely superb. And it sounds like you're doing some really good stuff, and the site looks great. And you know, as somebody who's obviously sitting between two very different worldviews, you must be doing an amazing job, judging by what I'm seeing. So, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Cheers, Don.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you, Marcus.
So there we go, slight delay, which made the conversation slightly more tricky for poor old Don, but not too bad. That was brilliant. This is a fascinating business model. I'm always interested in discovering like new approaches to stuff like this, you know, where somebody comes up with a slightly different way of doing things. So really interesting. Okay, so what next? I suppose we've got to do another sponsor, haven't we? That's got to cram them in. This is more mine. This is the balsamic thing. You know that balsamic have been basically giving away their sponsored slots to other people. So I don't consider this so much a sponsor slot as a, ooh, look what cool new thing balsamic's pointing us at, which is really good. The one that they've got this week is called User List, right? So it's a really useful tool for anybody who has got like a SaaS product, right? So let's say you produce some software as a service, and you have to communicate with your users, don't you? So you've got to do onboarding emails, you've got to do notifications about what's happening. There's loads of communications that go back and forth. So User List enables you to manage all of that. So it's a little bit like Intercom in that regards, but Intercom is this huge monstrosity of a enterprise tool for, you know, for the big boys, the grown-ups, you know. But for most people, it's massively expensive, and actually it's got far too many features. So that's why this looks really good, User List. I was having a poke around it earlier. So it's much easier to use than something like Intercom that's become quite intimidating. They've got all kinds of support as well that you can get around it. So for example, they've got like a free email planning worksheet to help you overcome that kind of analysis paralysis and to get started with it all. Because one of the big problems, I do a lot of onboarding emails, and like when people sign up for a masterclass or whatever else, and it takes quite a lot of thought to go, okay, when do I want to communicate? What do I want to say in order to be relevant at that particular moment, etc. So if you just fancy getting hold of their worksheets, it looks like you can download them for free at userlist.com/worksheets. Obviously, if you want to check out the product itself, that's userlist.com. It looks like quite an interesting one. So thank you for Balsamic for supporting the show and giving away their slots to other interesting tools. That said, I'll say this anyway. There's a promo code that I think still works if you fancy Balsamic as well. If you go to balsamic.com/go/BoagWorld, I think there's an old promo code that will work there as well.
Cool.
Okay, so that's that. Now we had somebody else.
Natalie.
What? Thank you. I'm glad you were paying attention. Let's see if I can find Natalie and get McLeese. Natalie on. Where is she? She must be here somewhere. I've got a long list. There she is. Right, so I've just invited Natalie on. Now, there's another name that I don't recognise that probably has been in the Slack channel for 300 years.
I don't recognise her name.
She could be called something completely random and different, couldn't she, on the Slack channel? So where all the cool kids go, the Slack channel, which reminds me, I really should give the Slack channel a little push. I can't find it quickly, and Natalie's already here, so I'll stop waffling. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well. See, this is advantages of us doing it slightly later in the day, Marcus. You've poo-hooed doing it at 5 o'clock, but we're now getting our friends from over the channel.
West Coast.
Oh, you West Coast. Wow.
West Coast, yeah.
So bright and early.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Natalie, tell us about yourself. What is it that you do? Where do you work? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so I've been listening to the podcast since episode one in 2005.
Wow.
We have actually met Paul at South by Southwest, I think, in 2009.
Wow.
And I'm in the Slack channel, but of course our work days don't overlap at all.
No. That's one thing I really regret about the Slack channel is that it is a little bit European focused. If you're in Australia or West Coast, you get screwed a little bit with the Slack channel. You've been listening since the beginning then. That's incredible.
Since episode one. Yeah.
Wow. I am so sorry.
Yeah. Back when Paul had hair and I had dark hair.
Yeah. And before Marcus was part of it. Yep.
Yeah. You've been involved with the podcast longer than Marcus has. That's awesome. Get off, Marcus. You've been upstaged. Bye. So what is it you do, Natalie?
So I currently split my time between two businesses. One is Digitally, which is an accessibility consultancy that I run on my own. So I do training and accessibility for designers, developers, everyone else, and also consult on projects for developers who need to build an accessible project for somebody. I can come in and review it every step of the way, wireframes, designs, everything, and make sure the final product is WCAG compliant. And then my other business that I work on 2 days a week is N-Squared, a tiny little software company. We do WordPress plugins. We've got 5 of them so far.
Oh, cool. So quite a lot of stuff then.
Yes.
So I'm interested to know where you met Paul at South by Southwest.
Probably
in the bar. Yes, that's what I was thinking.
We did a live show.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right. Yes.
I forgot that. Yep. Wow.
I came up and talked to you after the live show,
That was in the heady days when there was little competition and we had huge audiences. And, right. You know, not like now where it's, this is it. The 14 people that are currently in the room. How the world has changed. So I'm really interested in your the accessibility work that you do. So would you consider yourself more from the design side of things or the development side of things? Or do you, I guess when it's accessibility, it's both, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, a long, long time ago, I came from the world of graphic design. I got my start in my career doing packaging and trade show booths.
Wow.
Trade show booths. Yeah. Yeah. And then when the web came along, I just was fascinated with it. And I would say I've really moved into more of a developer role. I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, so it's been a really long time. I'm almost more of a front-end developer and do a lot of JavaScript development and things like that. So I've really got a good experience in both sides of things, which I think is really helpful, for approaching accessibility and keeping track of everything you need to think about.
Yeah, because it's constantly changing, isn't it? And you know, best practice improves. And it's tiring working in this industry, isn't it, really?
It is. I just had a contentious call with a client yesterday. I was giving them some advice about like alt text for their images and link text and things like that. And they were very upset on the call because they were doing things the way they had been told.
Yeah, right.
Like 10 years ago by someone else.
Yeah, that is the trouble, isn't it?
And it's your fault now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all on me.
So how does that, how are you finding interest in that? Because for a long time, accessibility was quite a tough sell. Do you still find that or do you have people queuing up wanting help with it these days?
So it's kind of weirdly both. There's definitely some people who just think, this is ridiculous. We don't need to do this. And I have a hard time convincing them. But then I do have more and more people specifically looking for accessibility. We've had a lot of lawsuits here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And they're increasing all the time.
Which is good for business for you, then.
Yes, good for business. And then I go to a lot of meetups and things like that and meet other developers, and then they hire me on to consult on their projects that need to be accessible. So that's been really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I've also found that the shift that we've seen towards also talking about inclusive design, the idea that, you know, at some point we've all got accessibility problems. Like, for example, years back where I severed the tendon in my thumb and I was in a cast for 6 weeks or whatever it was. Or, you know, when you're trying to use the internet while juggling a cat, not literally juggling it, but, you know, we all have those kinds of moments where, you know, screen glare, and, you know, so there are, I think thinking in those terms suddenly opens up the conversation about accessibility and makes it much more approachable from a business perspective rather than it just being about legal compliance, you know. So it's a carrot and stick approach in my, you know, you've got to scare them about the compliance, but also open up the possibilities too, you know.
Yeah, and I know at least a couple of developers who had some real problems with carpal tunnel and repetitive stress injury who have said, like, I have a whole new appreciation for accessibility since I had to struggle with that and trying to do my job with all that pain. And they just have a whole new perspective on how important it is.
I'll tell you another instance where you get a new perspective is when you reach me and Marcus's age. And, you know,
I don't think I'm very far behind you.
Well, I wouldn't possibly say. He said in his best British accent. But it's true, as we age, you know, the reading becomes a nightmare on some, especially on mobile phones, and if you're out in the sun, and you know, the text ends up being so tiny. I've got this problem on my own, on Boag World. It's interesting because that website was designed by Ed, who works at Headscape about 5 or 6 years ago. And he's quite a lot younger than me. And it was fine 5 or 6 years ago. I looked at it and thought, this is looks great. Now I'm looking at it and going, I can't flipping read my own website. So, you know, it's something we all struggle with at some point, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've noticed I start holding things out further and further.
Yeah.
You end up with these. I think I know how old you are based on that, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah, you can. You can definitely gauge people's age by how far away they hold things from them.
we've been starting to do things like ensuring that the websites we build, that the text changes with the settings that people have on their iOS device, which is kind of an advance in that area, which is really helpful because obviously the likes of me, I set my iPhone up to be a little bit, everything's a little bit bigger. So if I go to a website that recognizes that, then that's a good thing. So that's something we can certainly do. We work a lot with law firms as well, and it's just compliance with them. We've got to make sure that we're compliant because obviously they don't want to be sued for.
But do you think sometimes the compliance aspects can almost sometimes be a barrier to good accessibility? What do I mean by that? Sometimes people latch on to, we need to make this compliant and we need to fulfill the W3C guidelines or whatever else. And they're not actually, it's kind of a living to the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. Do you find that, Natalie? Is that a problem that you come across? Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I just did a project for a local hospital here, and they said they wanted the product to be accessible, but then they didn't want to redo any of the designs, which all had terrible color contrast issues because it was their branding colors. Yeah. And they didn't want to make these changes. And like, you can't just, it's not just checking off the checklist. You have to go back and think about the overall user experience and how accessible that is and how easy it is for everyone to use. It's not accessible if you checked all the boxes, but you have a terrible user experience.
Absolutely. And that's the trouble, isn't it?
With performance as well, you could argue, you know, mm-hmm. if something's really badly yeah. performant, then it may be not accessible under certain context or particular yeah. context.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that I think it's good that the guidelines have evolved to reflect that. You know, if you look back to WCAG 1 and it was quite, you know, here, do these automated checks and everything's going to be all right. Well, you know, WCAG 3 or whatever it is that we're on now, you know, is much more subjective. But I think a lot of people still have got that mindset of, if I just check these boxes and I do these things. And of course, the other problem with accessibility is, even if you make something accessible, you launch it and it's accessible for like 5 minutes before someone uploads an image without an alt tag. So there's yeah. as much as a cultural change as anything else, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I always try to make sure I do training for anyone who's going to touch website content before yeah. or around the time the project launches, for that very reason. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I find myself getting involved in governance stuff sometimes as well, of, you know, basic things like, well, this is how we approach building a web or creating a web page from an accessibility point of view, but also this is what we do if somebody complains, because I think sometimes there's not even, you know, anybody to talk to about this. And so a complaint comes in and it gets pinged around the organization and nobody actually ever does anything about it. And so in the end, people end up suing because they're not getting, you know, any kind of response out of it. So, yes. And, you know, and there is this perception that people kind of just one day decide to sue you, and it doesn't happen like that. It's only when you constantly ignore them or don't help them that it becomes a problem, you know?
Yeah, and the state of accessibility on the web is so terrible that you can't really blame anyone for just reaching the end of their rope and just yeah. getting so frustrated that they're doing the only thing they can think to do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I don't, you know, a lot of the time it just comes down to that organizations don't see the value of it, and so don't have people dedicated to it. And, you know, that's where the kind of stuff that you do is so valuable.
Oh,
well, wow. It's lovely to meet you again, apparently.
Yes.
Nice chatting with you.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
That was 2009. What, my word. When you're done, if you could, in the chat room, pop in those two different sites. We didn't even talk about N Squared, but pop in the URL. So I'll put them in the show notes to make sure they're included.
Okay, no problem.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Natalie.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye,
you.
Natalie.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. I any conversation about accessibility, you know, I can't shut up. As was quite apparent, poor old Natalie didn't get a word in edgeways then, did she? I got a bit overexcited.
That's most guests, Paul. Don't worry.
No. When Dom was talking. Yeah. Dom was talking about APIs and stuff like that, which just, you know, went over my head. But accessibility is a pet subject, I must admit. All right, let's pop in our last sponsor. And again, it's another really good one, so I'm excited to have them on the show, which is Aurelius. We talked about them last week. They're a user mm-hmm. research tool. And user research is great. We should all be doing it, but it has its challenges around it. We end up with lots of notes to wade through. We have clients and colleagues who need convincing of what we're doing. We've got to interpret all that data that we gather and all those notes. And we end up then repeating previous research because we didn't know it had been done and you couldn't find it, and it turns into a nightmare. So that's where something like Aurelius helps. It's a single platform for organizing, sharing, and interpreting all your user research. So it helps you move from that raw research data to actually insights, things you can action, because it can feel very overwhelming when you do that kind of user research. So everything goes into this research repository where you can analyze it, you can make sense of that research data easily and fast, and it helps you create those key findings and insights. You can search through everything so you're not repeating yourself. You can share your research findings to ensure that it actually impacts decision making across the organization. So go and check it out. It's at aureliuslab.com. So that's aurelius lab.com. So thank you very much to them joining us on the show as well. So there we go. Been a really interesting show. Talked a little bit about accessibility and high fashion. Two very similar, united subjects. How am I going to create a title for this week's show when it's like two totally different things like that?
You'll have to be creative, Paul.
Yeah, that's a good problem. So, Marcus, yes. Do you have a joke for us?
Well, Don, our first guest, is a regular poster
of
jokes. Yes. Now, I have to say, Don, that I don't use a lot of your jokes.
Why? They're obscene, aren't they? Let me guess.
No, they're not. I'm going to give you a couple of Don's. These are like probably the best I can find. Bless him. Have you heard about silent tennis? Apparently, it's like regular tennis, but without the racket.
Oh, boom, boom. That's quite a good one, actually. like that.
Here's another one. I turned over a new leaf yesterday. The people at the Nissan dealership weren't happy.
Well, as someone that owns a leaf, I quite like that. Those are both from Don, are they?
Yeah. He puts lots in, but yeah.
So those are good. Why are you not using those jokes?
Well, I just did use them. I just searched through quite a few to get to those. I feel guilty.
Oh, I see.
Now.
You're saying the overall quality is very low. Is that what you're implying? Poor Don's jokes don't stand up to much then.
No, I'm being mean. They're wonderful. They're certainly better than anything I can come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? I'm loving this season. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm loving having not the normal suspects, you know, not people like me that write books or speak at conferences or that, but people that are actually at the coalface doing this kind of stuff on a daily basis. I think you get a much more real impression of the industry. It was interesting. I was writing a post this morning about qualitative research. I Googled what else was out there, and it's all, everything that you find, it's all like, ooh, best practice. You should be doing user diaries and you should be doing in-field studies and you should be, which only you can only do if you're at the very top of the kind of pyramid of sites. You know, if you're working for the Googles and the Facebooks and things like that, the majority of people don't work in those kind of areas. You know, they're in the position Natalie's in of having to fight for accessibility to even be taken seriously, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's why this has been such a good season, I think, from my point of view, because you it reassures you that you're not doing something massively wrong and that, you know, all this stuff you read online isn't the norm. You know,
I just think it's been really nice to put names to faces that we speak to on Slack all the time.
Well, yes, there is that too. That's the best bit, really. But there's a lot of people that's listening to this that maybe aren't part of the Slack community.
True. Well, I forgot. So they should be.
Well, yes, they should. I'm trying to now remember the URL.
Slacking.
That's it.
Something.
boagworld.com/slacking. Please join the Slack channel, even if you're a stalker. You know, we've got like, I think we've got 1,500 to 2,000 people in the room, and probably I would say less than 100 are regular contributors. But it's so nice. It's so nice to bring those people together, and it's such a nicer place than Twitter these days. You know, there's very rarely any conflict, and everybody's really supportive and encouraging of one another. And you know, it's for me, out of everything I've done in my career, I think the Slack channel is the bit that I like the most out of it. Isn't that weird?
That's cool. That's really cool. I think it's cool as well.
Yeah. It's just this really nice little place to hang out. Oh, thanks, Daniel. He probably means that heart sarcastically, but we'll pretend that he did. That is pretty much the level of our Slack channel. It's come in and abuse Paul. That seems to be the universal constant that everybody is united behind. Anyway, I'm just waffling at this point. Thank you very much for listening to the show. I hope you've enjoyed our two guests, and we'll be back again next week where we will be... I was about to say what we're going to be talking about, but of course I have no idea.
No idea.
I have no idea. We will be talking to people.
Yes.
And if you fancy being one of those people, we would love to have you along. You can definitely join us, and you can do that by going to subscribe.boagworld.com/community and just sign up for notifications. But until next time, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.
Bye.